Today is Wednesday, March 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up,
the Paris meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping came ahead of a key EU-China summit April 9th.
That's Lisa Bryant reporting. We'll have more on the Chinese president's visit to France coming up. Also ahead, Britain's beleaguered Prime Minister Theresa May gathers her ministers for yet another emergency cabinet meeting. And the coalition ally of Algeria's ruling party calls for President Abdelaziz Bouteflika to resign. It's all on today's International Edition. Britain's beleaguered Prime Minister Theresa May gathered her ministers for yet another emergency cabinet meeting as the House of Commons upended centuries of constitutional practice and seized control of parliamentary business from the government in a bid to end the long-running impasse over Brexit. And in Parliament, members of the House of Commons are holding a series of votes on options for leaving the EU. VOA's Lori London spoke with London-based reporter Amy Gutman about why Theresa May can't get agreement on her Brexit plan.
That's right. So this is fairly unprecedented, members of parliament taking over this process. But you're correct. It was simply a case of Theresa May conceding the fact that she could not reach consensus here. And of course, put to a vote and parliament voted to take control. So what we know now is that MPs will hold a series of votes on alternate Brexit options. And this will be interesting because this is everyone's, including the naysayers, chance to provide alternate proposals. And this is something that Theresa May has been frustrated by a lot in the past, the fact that so many people have been so critical of her proposals, yet very few have come forward with any workable options. So interestingly, the hardline, the pro-Brexit MPs who previously were opposed to Mrs. May's deals are now considering backing it after the vote raised the chances of a softer Brexit. So there's that political play happening. Meantime, we have three ministers in her party who just resigned so that they could back a rebel group of conservatives who want to propose their own alternatives to May's Brexit deal. So there's a lot of political shuffling going on here.
I understand there's also a petition that actually is calling for Brexit to be stopped by revoking the UK's Article 50 letter.
That's correct. So there was a petition signed which amassed 5.75 million signatures. This is the most signed petition ever on the House of Commons and Government Petitions website. In fact, it even crashed the Parliament website several times. Dozens of high-profile celebrities are behind this. And this is a petition to revoke the UK's Article 50 letter. And Article 50 basically stops Brexit. What's interesting is that this was originally dismissed, and Parliament was not going to have a vote or even a debate about a second referendum and revoking Article 50. But now, because of this massive turnout and these almost 6 million signatures and a march that was held over the weekend, MPs have decided to hold a debate, so not a vote, but a debate about the possibility of revoking the UK's Article 50 letter. This is revoking Brexit. They'll hold that debate later today. Interestingly, at the same time, they're also going to debate another petition. Now, this was signed by a far fewer number of people, only about 150,000 people, demanding that the UK leave with or without a deal on March 29th. So interesting to compare almost 6 million signatures saying no Brexit at all and only 150,000 people saying deal or no deal, we got to get out on March 29th. But in a case of fair dues, both petitions will be debated next week. Now, a government spokesman has come out and said that they will not revoke Article 50. They will honor the result of the original referendum. However, the debate is an opportunity to allow the public a voice, and we'll see what emerges from the debate. Perhaps there will be a vote taken on whether to hold a second referendum. Meantime, the EU stands by its position, which is that they've offered two different date extensions for Brexit, either April 12th or May 22nd. And there will be the key dates in Parliament next week where they will discuss both of these petitions and also vote on alternate proposals for Brexit will be Monday and Wednesday.
If there were to be another referendum, is there any sense of how that would go and if Brexit could actually be reversed? so that the UK doesn't leave the EU?
It's very difficult to imagine that there will be a second referendum. This is something that many hardliners in the ruling party, that's the Conservatives, are really against. They feel very firmly that that risks democracy, really, at its heart, that this is what the people voted on. And even those who say, well, I wish I could take it back, you know, that's not how these things really work. You have a vote, and the vote is the vote. You know, the result is the result. So it's been difficult to imagine that there will be a second referendum. If there were to be, I certainly think that we'd see a much larger majority voting to remain than we saw previously. Whether we would see enough to tip the balance and revoke the Article 50 letter and Brexit altogether is also difficult to imagine, because at this point, so many people are so fed up with Europe. After all of the negotiations and the going back and forth and the hard lines that they've drawn, there is some sentiment that is certainly anti-EU at the moment. And a lot of the issues haven't changed.
That was reporter Amy Gutman in London speaking with VOA's Lori London. While top EU leaders joined Chinese President Xi Jinping in Paris in stressing multilateralism to address issues from peace and security to climate change and trade. Lisa Bryant reports from the French capital, where the Chinese leader is wrapping up a European visit.
The Paris meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping came ahead of a key EU-China summit April 9th. It gathered some of the bloc's biggest heavyweights, President Emmanuel Macron of France, Germany's Angela Merkel, and European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker.
Je retiens au fond quatre points de convergence. Le premier.
At a joint press conference following the talks, Macron stressed what he described as areas of convergence between the European Union and China, two of the world's biggest economic powers. Among them, intensifying the fight against climate change, denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, and development and security in Africa.
Ce que nous voulons bâtir ensemble.
Both sides, Macron said, want to construct a renewed multilateralism that is more just and balanced. President Xi said the world is facing major challenges and peace and development were key. He described the growing threat of protectionism and unilateralism. Several areas stressed by the two sides, including EU-Chinese support for the Paris Climate Agreement and the Iran nuclear deal, contrast with positions taken by U.S. President Donald Trump. The Chinese leader's visit to France is the last leg of a European trip marked by multi-billion dollar deals, including a major Chinese purchase of Airbus planes. Earlier in Rome, Italy became the first G7 nation to sign on to China's ambitious global Belt and Road infrastructure and investment initiative.
Dankeschön, meine Herren Präsidenten. Ich möchte mich als erstes bedanken bei...
The project is controversial, however, and it is one area of division within the European Union. Merkel said Europe wants to join the Belt and Road plan, but it demands reciprocity. Xi's visit was greeted by some rights protests. Media watchdog Reporters Without Borders also released a new report on China's alleged efforts to stifle media freedom abroad as well as at home. Cédric Alviani is the group's East Asia Bureau Director.
What we expect from that report is that all around the world, journalists would start investigating in their city, in their region, in their country, on the way the Chinese authorities are pushing their influence.
Alviani says China's Belt and Road Initiative is one way China is spreading not only its economic, but also its ideological influence. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Among the top stories in the world, Spain seeks the extradition of as many as 10 people from the United States who burst into the North Korean embassy in Madrid last month and tried to pass stolen information to the FBI. And healthcare re-emerges as a major focus of U.S. political parties, with the Trump administration advocating striking down the entire Affordable Care Act while Democrats move to keep it in place. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition. The coalition ally of Algeria's ruling party called today for President Abdelaziz Bouteflika to resign, piling pressure on the ailing leader after the army chief demanded he be declared unfit. In a statement signed by its leader, recently sacked Prime Minister Ahmed Ahouyaniya, the National Rally for Democracy said it recommends the resignation of the president with the aim of smoothing the period of transition. Edward Uranian has more for VOA from Cairo.
In a dramatic move, Algeria's army chief called on parliament during a nationally televised speech to declare ailing President Abdelaziz Bouteflika incapacitated, triggering Article 102 of the Constitution and handing temporary power to Parliament Speaker Abdelkader Ben Salah after a two-thirds vote of parliament. He says this is in order to find a constitutional outlet to the current crisis, which is the only way to maintain stability in the country and respond to the legitimate demands of the people while being an acceptable solution to all concerned. He calls on Parliament to trigger Article 102 of the Constitution, deeming the president to be incapacitated. Under Article 102, two-thirds of Parliament must vote to declare ailing incumbent President Abdelaziz Bouteflika, whose term officially ends on April 21st, unable to govern, giving temporary power to the Parliament Speaker as acting president for 45 days. The Constitutional Council would then rule on the president's inability to govern, granting a further 45 days as acting head of state to the parliament speaker. He would then organize fresh presidential elections. President Bouteflika, who recently returned from a trip for medical treatment in Geneva, indicated 10 days ago that he was calling off presidential elections, originally due to take place next month, but he would not run for a fifth term. Tens of thousands of people have taken to the streets of the capital, Algiers, and many other Algerian towns and cities to call on President Bouteflika to step down and to demand major political changes each Friday for the past month. Naaman Laour, a leader of the Movement for a Peaceful Society, told Algerian TV the president must bow to the demands of the people. He says that his group wants the sovereignty of the people to be the basis of all political activities, and that the only way for that to be the case is if there are free and democratic elections organized by an independent electoral commission. Algerian political analyst Abdelkarim Tabakani told Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV the army has chosen a political solution to the crisis that has befallen the country for the past month, triggering Article 102 of the Constitution, which would transfer limited powers temporarily to the Speaker of Parliament and the eventual resignation of the President after he is determined to be incapacitated by the Constitutional Council. He notes that the army also may declare a state of emergency as stipulated by Article 105 of the Constitution if the need arises. Several Algerian commentators also have told Arab media it was possible that President Bouteflika would step down voluntarily within the next 24 to 48 hours. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Well, local authorities and international aid agencies struggling to deal with the massive destruction and displacement left behind by Cyclone Idai in Mozambique are facing a new crisis, cholera. The UN is assessing the situation in Zimbabwe as calls for the government to provide aid more quickly grow louder. Columbus Mafhunga reports.
At Machongwe village in Zimbabwe's Chimanimani district, the area worst hit by Cyclone Idai, people wait as officials prepare food. Cornmeal has run out, but authorities say other food is being distributed. Coming here has become a daily routine for many since the disaster hit on March 16, including Susan Makuza. She takes care of 5 children whose parents died in the cyclone. Poverty has struck us, says Makuza. Our maize crops were swept away with the river. Our survival is at risk and we do not know what to do, she says. We came to receive food, but we were not given any and our houses went down the river. We are sleeping outside, says Makuza, adding that I was kindly asking for help. That is the same for 81-year-old Wamizai Matamande. There's really hunger here, says Matamande, because Cyclone Idai damaged our granaries. So we are frequenting this place hoping to get something like cornmeal. But I have not received anything, says Matamande. Lloyd Kasima is the acting district administrator for Chimanimani. He told United Nations officials assessing the situation that the government was aware of the villagers' struggle. He said after Cyclone Idai hit, more than 7,000 people were left homeless, while more than 40,000 people have no food.
But at the moment, the distribution is quite slow because of transport problems. But at the moment, there are some people, the Chinese contractors, who are at least trying to open our usual road. We have seen that they are making progress.
Bo Victor Neland is the Deputy Regional Director for the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund. He says UNICEF is setting up a temporary rehabilitation center at Ngangu School for children traumatized by Cyclone Idai. UNICEF is seeking aid to help Malawi, Mozambique and Zimbabwe address children's health, sanitation and education concerns in the wake of the cyclone.
Globally, for the three countries, it's going to be about 150 million that we're appealing. That's about the calculation at the moment. But we're also still discovering, because some of the areas are inaccessible.
Acting UN representative in Zimbabwe, Esther Muiya, says Harare is doing its best to cope given the scale of the needs.
There's still a lot of gaps. Most people lost all their food. And you know, there was an impending drought already in Manicaland. And the cyclone has actually compounded the whole situation. The waterways have been destroyed completely. People do not have clean, safe water for drinking. And that's a big priority at the moment.
The European Union has funded a World Food Programme owned helicopter to bring in UNICEF equipment and chemicals to prevent waterborne diseases. Villagers here hope donors will soon provide funds for airlifting much-needed food to the thousands of people left struggling to survive. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Chimanimani, Zimbabwe.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Are you looking for a good time this weekend? Hitting the club, house party, or maybe just chilling at home?
Please call Future Baby, Future Maybe.
Well, whichever way you want to roll, I'll get you listening, dancing, and relaxing all in one gorgeous hour.
Good time. Stop wasting good time.
You'll meet artists on the rise like Dawit Sharonet from Addis and Swagger Boys Dynasty from Juba.
Tune in to Music Time in Africa with your host Heather Maxwell on Radio Voice of America.
There's also awesome current hits, traditional music, and classics. So get it all with me, Heather Maxwell, on Music Time in Africa. This Sunday, 15:05 and 20:05 UTC. Enjoy your weekend.
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi says the country has shot down a satellite in low orbit, entering an exclusive club of nations that have developed anti-satellite weapons. In an unexpected address to the nation today, Modi called it a major breakthrough in the country's space capability. A missile fired from eastern India brought down the satellite in low Earth orbit about 300 kilometers away in an operation that lasted 3 minutes, he said. Modi said the test was not designed to create an atmosphere of war. He said, "I want to assure the world community that the new capability is not against anyone. This is to secure and defend fast-growing India." Well, India is the fourth country after the U.S., China, and Russia to have tested an anti-satellite weapon. The satellite interceptor was designed domestically by Indian space scientists. You've been listening to International Edition. Thanks for joining us. And you've been listening to International Edition, and thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Rob McLean. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
In a minute.
Living in the forests of the Southeast Asian island nations of Brunei, Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines is a tiny primate species called the tarsier. The most striking feature of the tarsier's appearance, besides its diminutive size and long hairless tail, are its giant round eyes, which provides the nocturnal and tree-living animal with incredible visual sensibilities. Since the tarsier is the only known primate that's solely carnivorous, their enhanced ocular abilities are of great help when they are out hunting prey at night. A group of researchers at Dartmouth College in New Hampshire have developed new open-access virtual reality software that allows the user to see the world through the eyes of the tarsier. Called Tarsier Goggles, the software imitates the vision of a tarsier and provides the user with an understanding of the advantages that the huge eyes provide the primates. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America. Thank you.